boasting regularly, it comes back to haunt you. I can just tell you that. And found that out again this weekend as we were getting ready to leave. Several people were talking about the weather in Kansas City. It was 28 and sleeting when we were there, and so I just kind of smiled rather largely and said, boy, I just feel so sorry for you. I'm going to Texas tomorrow. We brought it with us. Sorry about that. Very blustery here, but we do appreciate your attempt to make us feel at home. There was an ad run in the classifieds sometime back. I've had it in my files for quite a while. It said, for sale, wedding dress, size 8, worn once by mistake. Interesting in our society, in our time today, how many people have been in marriages and out of marriages again. We read those kinds of figures regularly in different surveys that are taken or different statistics that are provided for us, that upwards of 50% of marriages in this country end in dissolution. And then many of those people get married, and even a higher number of those who are on second marriages, those marriages end in dissolution as well. And that's a sad thing. It's a sad thing when it happens in society, period. It's even a sadder thing when we watch those kinds of numbers and how frequently they are influencing even our own lives within our brethren and within churches, within families that are not only supposed to be dedicated to one another for life, but dedicated to God for life as well. That's very, very discouraging. Every time I get news of somebody that I'm close friends with that has served the Lord for many years, and then you watch a marriage that is just starting to crumble. So if you think in terms of how many separate, think in terms of how many are struggling besides that. How many marriages are not what God intends them to be. As we mentioned in Ephesians chapter 5, God talks about the marriage being a picture of the relationship of Jesus Christ and the church. And I believe that God intends that marriage on earth be a delightful, a blissful arrangement of a relationship, and that he expects that it be a real and strong and full, complete fulfillment of what our lives ought to be. And so if it's short of that, then we're somehow missing what God has provided. He didn't indicate that marriage wouldn't come with any struggles any more than he indicated that life wouldn't come with any struggles. You remember that Jesus said, if you serve him and you dedicate your life to him, he said, you can expect that not everybody's going to like you, that not everything's going to go well in life. There are going to be people that persecute you. There are going to be difficulties that you have just because you're trying to do what's right. We understand that. But he says, besides that, his prayer for his disciples was that they have an absolutely full of contentment, joyful life, like he did. And so we ought to be able to overcome circumstances and still understand complete joy and fulfillment in life. How do we do that in life? How do we do that particularly in marriage? We want to talk this morning about a lesson that we've entitled, What Every Marriage Requires. Four things. Here's what we're going to do with this lesson. We're going to look at two mindsets and two actions that follow those mindsets. And we got a chance to talk a little bit about that this weekend as well, because God regularly in his word says, I need you to think a certain way. That's important, that you think a certain way in order that you would act a certain way. I need you to have the right perception of things in order that you would follow that with the right actions. And so we cited Philippians chapter 2 where he says, have this mind in you which was in Christ. He said, if I can get you to think like Jesus was thinking when he was on earth, which was a lot of different things. What are some of the things that Jesus was thinking, the ways in which he thought? What's that? Yeah, your heart matters first. We're studying the Sermon on the Mount back home, and it's interesting that Jesus spends a lot of time in that section saying, let me tell you what the problem with the Pharisees' approach to righteousness and serving God is. And that's what he talks about. They were very concerned about a lot of meticulous actions, but they didn't have hearts that were dedicated to God. I mean, think about how many times, and if you didn't hear that, he said thinking about his Father and what would please his Father. Think about how many times Jesus said, I didn't come to do what I wanted to do. I came to do the Father's will. That's what I'm here for. I am here as a servant. And so that whole servant mentality was a part of Jesus' way of thinking, wasn't it? And it's what drove his actions. You remember how many times he had conversations with the disciples saying, you guys have got to think differently than you do. They're fighting with one another over who's the greatest, who gets the positions that represent their greatness. And Jesus is saying, you guys have missed the point entirely. You've got to take a different attitude before you can change those actions. Well, that's what we want to do this morning. We want to talk about two mindsets followed by two actions that I think will allow us to secure our covenant agreement. And we'll talk about the covenant itself in the next session, in the sermon section. But four things that will allow us to keep the covenant. How do we beat the odds? How do we have a marriage that lasts for a lifetime? As I mentioned, we've got a couple where the woman just passed away this week at our congregation. Prior to her passing away, they'd been married 72 years. And every time you sat down with them, you thought, this couple is young and in love. They're 90 years old, but every time they sat down, they're talking to each other, and you think, I would love to have what they have when I'm that long married. How do we get to that point? We're halfway there. We're 36 years married. And so what do? You rest on your laurels and say, well, 36 years married, that's good. We've had 36 good years of marriage. Well, no, if the Lord allows us to live that long, I'd like to have 36 more great years of marriage. How do we do that? How do we make sure that we accomplish what God wants us to accomplish in our marriages? And here's what we want to talk about. Four things. First, you have to make a decision. You've got to decide on your goals in marriage. You have to set your mind in those things. You have to understand that I've got to have some idea of what I want in marriage. And it's important to do that. What do you think are the reasons for goals? Tell me why it's important to have goals. A reason to live. Absolutely. In other words, I've got some drive as to why I even want to be here. Yeah, absolutely. They provide direction for us, don't they? And let's start there for a minute, and we'll come back to that. Goals give us direction. How important is that? I love a quote. I don't know if you've ever done any sailing or not. I used to do some sailing. Lived in Florida, did a lot of boating and sailing, that kind of thing, when I was in Florida. There was always a saying when you were going sailing. Somebody would ask you, they would say, if you said you're going sailing, they said, is it a good wind? How do you know if it's a good wind? Well, they always used to say, if you don't know what port you're headed for, no wind is a good wind. How are you going to know if it's a good wind? You better decide where you're headed first. Because you can sail either way. And I don't know, people that aren't familiar with sailing sometimes don't realize that, but you can sail into the wind or with the wind. It doesn't make any difference. But sailing with the wind, you sail relatively straight because the wind's behind your sails. Sailing into the wind, you do what they call tacking, and you're going at 45-degree angles back and forth like this so that the wind will come around behind your sail and actually pull you forward even though you're going into the wind. But that's not as good a wind as this. So if I'm heading toward a port downwind, then that's a better wind. I need to know where I'm going. Where do you want to go with your marriage? How many couples are sitting down and saying, where do I want to be in my marriage next year? Where do I want to be in my marriage 5 years from now? Are we setting goals? Are we saying, I want to understand where it is I want to be? Do we do that? How critically important is that? Companies do that, don't they, in business? Companies sit down and say, you know what, we need to figure out where do we want to be at the end of this year? Where do we want to be next year? What is it we're trying to accomplish? Are we doing that with our marriages? Are we sitting down? You look at Jesus and his prayers and others and their prayers. You look at the Apostle Paul, and he's talking constantly about what it is that he wants to do, how he has set his mind on certain things. Remember talking about Jesus as he's headed toward the cross, that he resolutely set his mind on that, on going to Jerusalem. He understood, this is where I have to go. I'm going to have to do whatever I need to do in order to get where I have to go. And that's what he helps us understand. We've got to have direction in our life. Secondly, though, they keep us focused. Hebrews chapter 12 Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2 is a great passage to help us understand that. Jesus made it to the cross. Was that an easy thing? How many of you think that was an easy thing for Jesus to go to the cross and hang on the cross for us? I mean, that wasn't easy. He prayed to his Father even when he was in the garden, didn't he? Let this cup pass from me. That was secondary to the Father's will. His request fell secondary to the Father's will. He says, but let your will be done. But he was saying, this is a most difficult thing. It describes him as being in agony over these things. And yet, it tells us that we need to do what? Somebody describe what we're told to do in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. What's that? To run with patience. So we're going to have to think about that, and we'll get to that in just a moment. What's he say first? What is it we're doing? Keep your eyes fixed on Jesus first, he says. Looking unto Jesus first, right? Who what? What enabled him to endure the cross? The glory that was set before him. You think Jesus didn't see something? You think he just walked to the cross kind of in a blind fashion because God told him to do that? No, he saw what was beyond the cross. The glory that was set before Jesus allowed him to see that, and it says he's so focused on being able to be back with the Father in heaven that it enabled him to endure the cross. He was able to accomplish what he needed to accomplish. He says that's what we need to do. We need to be focused. We need to set our eyes, set our focus on God in order that we can do that. And in order to accomplish that, it's important for us to understand outside of God, marriage is your top priority. Your dedication to God first, but your dedication to your spouse second. It is the only relationship that God has said will absolutely and must be lifelong. We have three children. We will never stop loving our children. Every parent understands that. But all three of our children are in a different relationship than I would say Ross's four children are with him. Why? Because he is still their father as the primary relationship of that child to him, every one of these. Mine's not that way. All three of ours are married. Primarily, all three of our sons are somebody's husband first. They're still my sons. Or our sons, if they're not in trouble. They're still our sons, but not primarily. Primarily, they are somebody's husband. Marriage is the one that God says for life. It is primary. Your children will grow up and leave your home, and God designed it to be that way. But this is a lifetime relationship, and we need to understand that. So what does it take to establish that kind of priority? You have to set boundaries. You have to set boundaries. How many people in here ever do a to-do list? Anybody ever do a to-do list? All right, let me ask you the... How many of you have ever done a to-do list, and when you looked at the to-do list, the first thing you understood was, can't get it all done today? You ever done that? And so what's the very next thing you have to do? You're going to have to prioritize. Somebody's going to have to decide, if I can't get it all done today, I'm going to have to strike something off the list. This is one of the things that doesn't get done today. We understand that, don't we? We have to set some parameters. We have to set boundaries. It becomes important. I can no longer, when I become a union, a new entity with my wife, I cannot be in a position to where my friends take the kind of dominance of time that they could take when I was single. Yeah, I can't be the kind of person where my hobbies take the kind of dominance of time that they could when I was single. That my parents and family outside of my spouse cannot take the dominance of time and effort that they did when I was single. We talked about the idea of leaving and cleaving in the college age class the other day because we sometimes wrestle with that. We had a couple that they got married and was moving away from the area where their parents lived, and the parents were commiserating about that, and the whole time I'm thinking, that's such a good thing. Let them get away. Let them be husband and wife for a while so that you don't have the automatic difficulty of whether or not the parents stay too involved or whether the kids want the parents to stay too involved. We need to have the boundaries. We need to understand that that's the case. But then secondly, it's not only the goals that you establish. You're going to have to do something with the goals. You're going to have to develop a plan. This is really where the work starts. You can set goals pretty easily. Would you agree with that? I mean, I can set all kinds of goals. Can't you? The problem is not setting the goal. The problem is executing the plan to achieve the goal. Would you agree with that? What's the difference between a plan and a goal?
Work.
Absolutely, work. How would you define to somebody the difference between these two? Absolutely the point. A goal is where you want to be. It is what you need to be in this particular case. A plan is what you need to do in order to be what you want to be. We've watched things like Olympic sports. You ever watch any Olympic sports and seen some of the athletes in the Olympic sports? And you think, wow, that must be really cool to be as athletic as they are and to achieve what some of them have achieved. The question is, why do you think they achieve that and so many don't achieve that? Is it just purely ability? It's work. There are a lot of people, me included, who are not willing to give up what they gave up to be in the position that they are. Many of them leave their homes when they're young kids and spend all day, every day, it seems like, in training. I watched a guy on TV who was a triathlete, and it was showing him eating. He took cottage cheese, low-fat cottage cheese, and he put it in a strainer, and he ran it under running water for about, I don't know, 5 minutes to get any remaining fat off of it. He cooked some hamburger ground up to make a meal. He did the same thing. I'm thinking, no thanks. If that's what it takes to be able to compete in that particular event, no thanks. Matter of fact, don't even give me the low-fat stuff to start with. Add the fat to it. That's okay. I wasn't willing to go through what they go through. That's all I'm saying. The exercise routines that they go through to get there. A plan is, here's my goal. I want to be an Olympic athlete. Somebody's going to say, here's what it's going to take to do that. I want to be anything. What's it going to take in order to accomplish that? You need to get proactive in your marriage. You need to set a goal for your marriage, and you say, here's what we're going to do in order to accomplish that. If not, there's a real danger as you're trying to develop a plan that we get into this someday syndrome. Have you ever thought these kind of things? I need to spend more time in prayer. Anybody ever thought that? I need to spend more time in prayer. Anybody ever thought, you know what, I need to spend more time in Bible study? Or I need to do better at this, only to maybe a year down the road be able to say the same thing because I didn't accomplish what I wanted to accomplish. You have to have some kind of plan. You can't just say, you know what, I need to be better at prayer. You're going to have to devise, how am I going to get better at prayer? I need to read the Bible more. A lot of people read the Bible, you know, through on a yearly basis, that kind of thing. We read it differently, Judy and I do, in the sense of the plans that we use to do that. But she's one of those ones that uses one of those little check sheets that says if you read this today and this tomorrow and this the next day, that at the end of the year you will have gotten through the whole Bible in this year. She has done that year after year after year, and the check marks are always there, and you have to print new sheets and you're putting more check marks. But it allows her to have a plan to know exactly what it takes to execute what she needs to do. In marriage, if we're setting goals for our marriage, how are we sitting down and saying, here's exactly how I'm going to get there? How am I going to accomplish this plan? I love a quote by Les Parrott. Les and his wife Leslie Parrott have written several books on marriage. He says, make no mistake about it. He says, you will never achieve your ideal marriage as a mere passenger. You and your partner must both have your hands on the wheel. I like that quote. You think you're going to have a great marriage because you're in love? Good luck with that. That's not going to work. The love that you have when you get married isn't even remotely what you'll understand love to be after you've been married for some kind of time. And I'm not saying you don't love your wife or love your husband when you get married. I'm saying you don't begin to understand what the intricacies of that relationship and love are when you first get married. There's so much infatuation and so much lust involved in the beginning, and so much of that physical attraction and all that goes with that. That's going to fade. You know that beautiful, beautiful, physically beautiful woman? I always get in trouble when I use this example. I can just tell you. But that beautifully, that physically beautiful woman that you're marrying, that strikingly handsome man, he's going to be old and wrinkled and ugly someday. Just count on it. And if it's physical beauty, I'm not saying they lose their beauty to you. I'm saying if physical beauty is what brings two people together, there's at some point to which it's no longer going to hold you together. It takes more than that. You're going to have a plan. How am I going to accomplish that? One man said, hell is to drift, heaven is to steer. I think that's an accurate quote. Just allow yourself to drift. God talks about that in Hebrews. Lest we drift. We talked about that, or we knew about that when you're boating in Florida. Drifting, not a very good thing. Drifting will rarely take you the right direction. We need to steer in order to go the right direction. Here's some things that we need to do in order to chart that course. One, we need to ask for divine guidance. Psalm 127, verse 1 says that unless the Lord builds the house, what? You labor in vain. It's a waste of time. Unless God is the one at the head of your house, you're just wasting your time if you're trying to accomplish what He wants you to accomplish. So you're going to have to ask for divine guidance. God, what do you want from us? You're going to have to pray to Him, and husband and wife together saying, what do you want from us? How do you want us to do this? How do you want us to raise our children? What do you want us to, and then how are you going to find the answer to that? You have to read it. He told you the answer. I mean, my prayer is me speaking to God. If I'm waiting for Him to audibly speak back to me, I'm in trouble. Because He's already spoken to me. He said, let me tell you what kind of husband you ought to be. Mark, you ought to love your wife, Ephesians 5 says. You ought to love her sacrificially. You ought to nourish her. You ought to cherish her. Let me tell you, Judy, what kind of wife you ought to be. You need to be a submissive wife, understanding role relationship in marriage. You need to respect your husband. Let me tell you, Mark, what kind of husband you ought to be. It says you ought to honor your wife in 1 Peter chapter 3. You need to give her great value. You need to understand that she's a fellow heir of the kingdom of God, and that you are there and you can help her achieve her godliness so that she can arrive in heaven with you. So much so that God says, if I don't understand that, He says, don't even pray to God because your prayers are not going to go above the ceiling. He says, lest your prayers be hindered. That literally means stopped at the ceiling. They don't go anywhere. I need to have this relationship right to have this relationship right. And so He's saying, that's what I need to do. He's going to give me the plan. He's going to say, Judy, here's what kind of woman you need to be, what kind of wife you need to be. Think about that life is not all about appearance, it's about your heart. And it's about what kind of person you are. And He describes that for us. He tells us in general as well as specifically what kinds of things we ought to be. Secondly, you have to decide what matters most. That's that prioritizing. Remember Mark chapter 8, verse 37. Jesus is going to ask a question. And it's about an exchange rate. Anybody remember what Jesus says about our souls and an exchange rate? What's He say? So what would you give? He says, let me just ask you, what would you trade? What would you trade? If I could give you this, would you be willing to sacrifice your soul for it? That's what Jesus is asking. What would a man give in exchange for his soul? What, in other words, what is your soul worth? We understand that's a rhetorical question, don't we? He's not saying, I want you to actually try to figure that out, because there is no answer to that. We understand that. There's nothing. There's nothing worth my soul. He says, I have to understand, I'm going to have to decide what matters most. And either my marriage matters most, or my personal comfort matters most. Or my marriage matters most, or my friends matter most. Or my marriage matters most, or my family outside of my marriage matters most. Or my hobbies matter most. My work matters most. He's saying, I'm telling you, you're going to have to decide. If you're going to have a plan, you better decide what matters the most, and that's where you better dedicate your time. That's the easiest way to tell what matters most to people. Would you agree? Where do they put forth their effort and their time? And that'll tell you what really is nearest and dearest to their heart. And Jesus says we better consider that. A lady by the name of Michelle Weiner Davis wrote these words. She said, "The number one cause for breakdown in marriages today is the same issue that causes infidelity. Couples aren't prioritizing their marriage. People spend time on their careers, their kids, community affairs, hobbies, sports, but they take their spouses for granted. It just doesn't work that way. In other words, to have a strong marriage, your spouse must come first." That means you're going to have to, as we talked about yesterday, set aside some time. Parents that have multiple young children, kids can absolutely steal a marriage away. Do we need to spend time with them? We absolutely do. But you realize what happens to relationships once you start bringing children into a household? You realize there's 20 relationships in a house once you have three children? Child to child, each child to each other child to parent, each parent to parent. There's relationships that just continue to continue to grow with each child that's added to a household. It is much more difficult to figure out how to give proper time to my wife when I have got this many relationships over here I have to give some time to. God's not saying neglect your children in order to give time to your wife or to your husband. But he's saying you better understand which one of those is permanent. And if you sacrifice your husband for the sake of the children or your wife for the sake of the children, he says you've missed the point too. They can take away our marriage. There's a lot of time involved. We just need to make sure that we're going to consciously put forth the effort to keep our wife first. You know, each day, thinking about it each day, speaking about it, talking about that, and understanding. Thirdly, you're going to have to decide what you want to change. Once you decide what matters most, you got to decide, how am I going to accomplish that? Before we got married, I used to play a lot of ball. Baseball, softball, most anything like that. I could not maintain what I needed to maintain in this relationship if I continued to do all the things that I did hobby-wise before. So for me, it was a matter of saying, you know what? Some of those things have to fall by the wayside. Did I enjoy doing them? I did. I loved doing them. I had a blast doing them. I enjoyed the people I did them with. But I'm not going to spend the rest of my life with this guy over here that I play ball with. Not every day. This is my life. And I need to understand what I'm going to change, what's going to drop. And in order to accomplish that, I would tell you you're going to have to set some short-term goals. It can't just be, here's what I'd like my marriage to be in 5 years. Whenever I counsel with couples that are struggling in marriage, I always ask them these questions on the front end. One, are you willing to do, or first I ask them, what's your goal for this marriage in 5 years? Forget whether you think you can get there or not, because couples come and they're thinking, we can't save this marriage. And I want to show them with God's word that many, many, if not most or all couples who wanted to could save their marriage if they dedicate themselves to God's word. So I say, forget whether you think you can be there. What would you like the picture? Paint me a picture of where you'd like this marriage to be in 5 years. And so they do that. And the second question I ask them, I say, are you willing to do whatever it takes to get from here to there? Because that's what you're going to have to decide. And I'm going to have to decide, so how do I get there? So let's suppose you want to pray more. The first time I ever read a quote about Martin Luther that said, he said, I have so much to do that I start every day with 2 hours of prayer. I have to tell you, now I'm a Christian when I read this, but my first thought was, I've got so much to do I couldn't possibly spend 2 hours in prayer to start the day. A whole difference in the way of thinking. So what do? You say, well, you know what, I'm not praying anywhere near that amount of time per day, starting the day off. So tomorrow I'm going to start praying 2 hours. Try that. You want to become a better prayer tomorrow, just decide you're going to sit down tomorrow morning and start with 2 hours of prayer. You're not going to be able to accomplish that. It's like saying, you know what, I want to be a long-distance runner, so tomorrow I'm going to start running 10Ks. Well, good luck with that, too. I mean, unless you're already in that kind of physical shape, it's not going to happen. But you may have to say, matter of fact, we've got a chart on our wall at home that says, I can't remember how many days it is, but something like 115 days to a 5K. And it's saying no matter what shape you're in to start with, it's a workout plan that will get you ready to run a 5K in this amount of time. But I assure you, you're not running 5Ks to day one. It's got you doing a little bit of walking, you know, and you're progressing. Set some short-term goals. What do I want to do in my marriage this week? What am I going to say this week? I'm neglecting this part of my marriage before. Every day this week, I'm going to do this or I'm going to say this. You need to set some short-term goals. Thirdly, You need to determine to commit. We'll spend more time on this in the next session because this is what the wedding vows are all about. These are the promises that I've made. These are the things that I'm saying, here's what I'm absolutely committed to. Let me ask some of the people that are married. How many people in here are more committed to their marriage today than they were the day they got married? Now, that was a trick question, so I hope you don't feel badly, but I'm going to say shame on you. Why weren't you committed the day you got married? We answer that question because we're thinking something different. I understand that because that's the way I would answer that question normally too. We're not more committed. The day we get married, we make a promise for an entire lifetime, do we not? How much more committed can you be than that? I think what happens is, how many people understand what that commitment is today much better than you did when you got married? I think that's the nature of what we're really answering. I didn't get married half committed to my wife. I got married completely committed. It'd be like asking, are you more committed to Christ today than you were the day you came to Him? If you were, then you didn't come to Him the right way. Because what He says is you've got to deny yourself to come to me. Christ says, I want you to come to me with total commitment. But I assure you, I understand what that commitment means today much better than I did the day I came to Jesus Christ. I mean, I answered with the mindset, yeah, Christ, I'm going to give you whatever it takes. But I assure you, there are things that it takes that I didn't know it was going to take. But I've already made the mind up to say I'm going to do whatever it takes. That's what commitment is. That's what it is in marriage. The mindset is total to begin with. The day you get married, you are totally committed. That's what the vow is all about. I'm making a promise to my wife. What do you think are the two things that are the largest source of problems regarding us keeping our commitments in today's society? The biggest enemies of commitment.
Selfishness
is absolutely one of them. Absolutely. We fight ourselves so much. There is no question about that. Selfishness is the cause of so much conflict wherever it is. That's the way it was with Jesus, wasn't it, when he was talking to his disciples? You ever feel sorry for Jesus and the frustration that he must have felt when he's talking to his disciples? And they're still arguing over positions at the table and who's the greatest. And Jesus has to grab a towel and a bowl and say, do you guys not even understand what it's about? It isn't about you, but selfishness. When I want what I want, it's hard for me to be committed to what I need to be committed to. Selfishness is one of those two. Let me come back to that. The other is overcommitment in our society. We have so many things that we can be committed to. We have so much incredible amount of choice of things to do and places to be and people to be with that it's sometimes hard to focus on a single thing. And so we need to make sure that we're not overcommitted. I tell young parents this all the time. It is not important that your children be able to play and play well three different sports, take judo lessons, and be involved in gymnastics or some other kind of orchestra and playing of some kind of instrument. Now, can any of those things be good? They can. They can be great. Our kids got involved in those things. But I'm telling you, if what you're focused on is your kids playing multiple sports and doing everything else, you're going to find that you are strung so thin that it's very difficult to dedicate the time to your wife or your husband that you ought to be able to dedicate to. Can they be involved in those things? They can. Make sure your priorities are right. Understand this commitment is first. And if you get overcommitted, it's going to have to steal from somewhere else. We need to make sure that that's the case. We need to understand that commitment's a choice. And it's not an easy choice because we don't always think about what it's asking us. Joshua, you remember? Joshua said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That was his choice. And then he asked the people whether or not they wanted to do that. And the people said, absolutely, that's what we're going to do too. And you remember what Joshua said? Joshua said, can't do it. How's that for an evangelistic method? Jesus saying to people, you cannot be my disciple. Try that for your evangelism method. You can't be a disciple of Jesus. What was the point of those statements? Joshua and Jesus were both saying the same thing. Do you understand what you're saying when you say you're going to follow the Lord? That's what Joshua was saying. He says, I'm willing to make the commitment. Do you understand? You can't just say yes. Do you understand what he's asking for? Jesus was saying the same thing. It requires incredible commitment. Commitment is a choice. I need to do that. And it's going to require time and sacrifice. Time and sacrifice required for me to commit to my wife. And then finally, dedication to finish. That's the walking again. The commitment is my choice. I set a goal. I developed a plan to work the goal. I have another mindset that I'm committed to my spouse for the entire time that we are alive, and then I'm going to be dedicated to carry that out. That's literally the idea of putting one foot in front of the other, taking a step, because it isn't always going to be just gliding along arm in arm. Sometimes it's going to require effort. It is going to require some real difficulty in decision-making and trying to figure out what we're going to do. Two key elements to the dedication. One, it requires patience. It's giving room to grow. Do you ever find yourself impatient with your children because you wish they would behave more adult-like, but they're not adults, they're children? To be a parent requires patience, doesn't it? I mean, it'd be great if at 3 years old they were as responsible as they hopefully should be by the time they're 25, but they're not. We understand that. We may find that we are in a position of struggling with our spouse because we lack that patience, but I've got the dedication that says, I've got to give room to grow. Why? Because I can't even imagine how much patience it requires on her part. Keep that perspective right. It requires patience on her part as well to grow, to allow me to grow. But then it also requires endurance. That's different than patience. Sometimes we talk about the patience of Job. When that's mentioned in the New Testament, consider the patience. It's not really the patience like we think of patience. Patience is what you need when you're rounding that last aisle at the grocery store and you realize, all the lines are full. I was hoping somebody would be opening. Or patience when we're on the road and we think, this guy in front of me is going 2 miles an hour slower than he ought to be going. This is really going to cost me some time. Or your computer takes 3 seconds to boot up instead of microseconds. Patience is that short-term stuff that just keeps us from being too aggravated too quickly. The endurance that Job had was the ability to bear up under unbelievable strain long-term, to be able to carry that great burden, that great weight. He lost his whole family. He lost all of his possessions. And it says, consider the endurance of Job. He did not give up on his faith. He held on because there will be times in marriage that are tougher than others. And that's that idea of putting one foot in front of the other. Several years ago, we went out to Colorado. It was the first time I'd ever been in Colorado. Day two that we are there, we're in Estes Park area, staying near Rocky Mountain National Park. We decided to do a summit hike on a mountain. Guys that grow up at sea level have no idea what that means. I found that out pretty quickly. So we start walking up Mount Ida. Their first mistake of the group was they put me in charge. So I'm walking because the guide said you need to walk about 1 mile per hour. Here's a challenge if you don't know what that is. Get on your treadmill and set it at one. You have to look down to make sure you're moving. You think, I can't walk that slowly. So I walked at a neighborhood pace. And we got up a certain height. We made it 9 minutes, 59 seconds. We're all sitting on a log, sucking wind as hard as we can because we can't breathe. And it's supposed to be a 4-hour hike. We're 9 minutes in. So we continue to walk. Once we catch our breath, we slow down. And we're walking. When we get to almost 13,000 feet, there is no oxygen at 13,000 feet, as far as I'm concerned. They'll tell you there's some. I'm telling you there's none at 13,000 feet. So I am literally walking from about here to here and stopping and catching my breath again. And then walking another 10 or 12 feet and catching my breath again. Buzzards followed us for the last 2 hours of the hike. They knew they were in for a meal. But we had already determined we were going to summit the mountain. Had we not made the commitment, had I not publicly in front of others made that commitment, I would have quit, I assure you. But we had made the commitment. And so I walked as slowly as I had to walk, but we finally summited the mountain. That's dedication. That's just saying, I'm only doing this because I've made a commitment to do that. And so what I would advise you in marriage is to understand this. Don't fall behind. I fell behind a couple times. You think it's hard to walk, it's even harder to catch up with the group that's ahead of you. Don't fall behind in your marriage. Start now. Set the goals, develop the plans, make the commitments, and make sure you've got the dedication to say, we're going forward from this point. That's the nature of the vow that you took when you got married. Many of the marriages at least say what? From this day forward. However long it lasts, from this day forward, I want to give whatever it takes in order to have what God wants me to have. Thank you guys so much for your attention.